The text chat that we're starting. Thanks. Okay. So anyway, this is Vance Stevens in Alliance United Arab Emirates, and we're wrestling with internet today, it looks like. Jeff Kuhn is here from Ohio, and I'm here in Alliance. My connection keeps dropping out. I keep dropping out of this call, but we started it now. Thomas Lawrence, Lawrence was Thomas, what's his last name? Lawrence, yeah, Thomas Lawrence was here a minute ago. Even seems to, oh, he's here and left. Okay, so he might have been having connection problems too. Dave Dodgson was
Last saw
with us
him
on
in the game.
in the game. All right, there you go. That's
I
a
must
healthy
have been
place to be.
Minecraft at the moment.
Okay, well, that's a safe place to be. Bobby can go there and find him and broadcast her screen. Okay, so I hope, and David has just scrambled back. That's good to know. We're
Okay, yeah, I think
talking.
I'm back on now.
Yeah, you are. Okay.
Sorry.
So we're having all kinds of connection problems all over the world. It seems to be a worldwide phenomenon. I was just we just got started. I started the broadcast, and I was just saying who we are. This is Sunday, the 1st of February, 2015, and this is the normal time for our Learning Together events, learningtogether.net. That's learning with a two in it, a number two, learningtogether.net. And there you find information about what we're doing. But basically, David and Jeff have joined us because they're part of this, and Bobby as well, and me, we're all co-moderators at EVO Minecraft MOOC. Yay! Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, there was a yeah, we got some facial expressions there. That was good. Shall we try it again? EVOMC15. Oh well. Okay, well.
All zoomed in on things.
Yeah, could be. Okay.
Screen overload.
This is gonna sound terrible in the recording. Okay. Anyhow, we're right now, the co-moderators are here, which is really nice. And Maha Abdelmonin is listening in the chat wing, which is chatwing.com/VanceS. Oh, and Maha says she'd be grateful if someone would tell her how to connect from within Second Life. Or Minecraft. Oh, okay. She wants to know how to get into Minecraft, so we'll put in the text chat in the chat wing the link to our Google Plus community, which is actually all the information for how to connect with us is there. So I'll put that in the chat wing. And anyway, that will help Maha do that. So, Jeff, David. Maybe we should talk to David while we have him here before he drops out again.
Good idea. Okay, well, hello everyone. I hope my voice is coming through clearly.
Yep. Here's
Oh,
good.
okay.
Sounds good.
I was worried that beep was the sound of me dropping out. Okay. Yeah, so
No. Beep that.
first of all, I should introduce myself a little bit. I haven't been very active in the MOOC so far. It's because I've been playing Minecraft all the time. Only joking, of course. Just yes, lots of busy things going on at work. But my name's David, or Dave, as some people call me. Both are fine with me. And I'm joining you from Gabon, where I arrived at 6 months ago. I've been setting up a language school here and also working in the EAL program of an international school. And I've been working in language teaching for 15 years. And it's the last 2.5 years, I'd say, where I've started to explore more and more this idea of game-based learning and bringing video games into the classroom, either using the games themselves or just using gaming as a topic to kind of drive our lessons forward. Minecraft was actually where I got started with the whole idea of game-based learning. I can maybe fill you in on that a little bit more later. But over the last year and a half, I've been joining things like this MOOC, and I've been giving some online talks with the British Council and virtual roundtable reform symposium about game-based learning. So I kind of, when I do those, I try to explore kind of, you know, how it's important for the students and my role in it. And what I started to realize as I explore that more is everything I like about game-based learning is actually the same as everything I like about learning. Since very early in my teaching career, I've always found the best way to get my language students connected with the language as much as possible is to personalize the learning process. So with the kids I've worked with primary school and teenagers as well, I found using this topic of games and the games that they're into, which at the moment there's nothing bigger than Minecraft in that respect, that really helps me make that personal connection and get them into that personalization of the learning process. It's a way, it's, you know, and with something like Minecraft, I mean, I'm definitely not an expert. My 9-year-old son knows way, way more about the game than I do or probably ever will. But again, that's something that fits in with my beliefs about teaching, this idea that it's not the teacher imparting knowledge to the learner, but rather it's a kind of cooperative process that the teacher and the learner work together and move forward together. So that's another good thing with using Minecraft and other games in class. It kind of levels things out a bit, that I'm in the same position or sometimes a weaker position than my students in terms of my knowledge of the game. But together we build something up. They bring in their expertise of the game and I bring in my knowledge of how the language works, and together we kind of fit that together to make our learning process. So yeah, that's basically why I'm interested in game-based learning and what I try to help my students get out of it. I don't know if Jeff or Vance, if you've experienced something similar to that or not.
We're experiencing something similar to that right now in this, what we're calling a MOOC. I'm using, in my blog post, I used a lowercase m to make it a minuscule open online course. But in any event, that's the whole premise of what my idea to get everything started, and what you guys have come in on, and it is basically running an EBO session as if it were a game that some of us don't really know how to play very well. And Mariana, our other co-moderator, and Bobby and myself really haven't used Minecraft before, but we can see its potential mainly from reading your articles and listening to your presentations. And David and Jeff, both of you, have done some interesting work with Minecraft, and obviously and Mariana and I and her son Philip, 11-year-old Philip, wrote a Tessel EJ article where we used some of your work to make a case for using Minecraft with language learners. And Philip was a case in point. It's a case study that Marianne interviewed him. And so in any event, that's, I wanted to learn something about it. I've been thinking about Minecraft for a very long time and have not really been able to get off the mark. And so a good way to do that is to challenge yourself, of course. So I just proposed an EBO session and did exactly what you just described. It's, you know, putting yourself in a position that where you don't have the knowledge yourself, but you can learn from people in the game or in the session. And I'm learning a lot from Jeff. We all are, and from you too, of course. So we're learning from each other. We've attracted some super kids, Carlos in Spain, and of course Philip in Croatia, and There's a kid down the street from us, actually. He's in our running group. His name is Ian. He's the one who built the big hotel. Let's see. Well, so I think there might be some other kids around. I don't know if you think of any, but anyhow, we're learning. We're flipping things from the traditional what we said, the learner-teacher dichotomy generally assumes that the learner, the teacher is older and has the knowledge and is dropping it down, and we're doing sort of flipping that because we know so little about this, and they are so keen to impart what they know, and they just, these kids and also the other people who know, like Jeff, for example, is really keen to inform us all about Minecraft, and that's what we're enjoying right now. It's exactly the situation you described. So, Jeff, your turn.
I completely agree, and I thought what Dave said was interesting about, you know, what's good about games is good about learning, and I've been digging through a lot of kind of old research, and I found an interesting quote from, this is from 1979, just talking about regular classroom games. This is Susser said that games let you move from pseudo to real communication, display competence and natural communicative use, and allow students to engage in autonomous interaction. And so we jump forward 30 years, and that's exactly what we're doing with these games. And it's been kind of neat to see how it's not just the game, but then it's what Jim G calls big G games, you know, that surrounding community. So we've got Minecraft, but then we also have our MOOC and the amount of language and interaction that goes on there too. It's all kind of, it's a bit overwhelming, but if you just, as a teacher, sort of just let it run its course and trust that students are going to be engaged for all the right reasons, it really works. I mean, we've produced a lot of language, whether it's in-game, through Hangouts, through the MOOC. Only problem is how do you capture that lightning in a bottle? That's what I'm always trying to find out, is how do you achieve these sort of things when you have schedules and course objectives? And so I'm kind of curious to see how Dave's students are handling this, and how do you fit these into, you know, your curriculum requirements?
Good question. Okay, can I just mention? Can you hear me? By the way, am I unmuted? Am I unmuted?
I can hear you.
Can you hear me? Okay. My Hangout screen, let me just inform you, my Hangout screen froze, and I can't unmute myself. So, and I'm not sure what will happen. Anyway, go ahead, please. Take that, David.
Okay. Well, really, my experience with using Minecraft with my students and in classes kind of has two distinct phases. In my previous job in Turkey up until last summer, we didn't actually have the opportunity to use the game in class, so we were kind of working around that. So I used to have students taking screenshots of things they'd done in the game and bringing those into class, or sharing them on the class blog, or they were screencasting and making their own videos and narrating the videos at the same time, and doing the same, bringing those into class to show on the class computer or sharing them on a class blog. I had a couple of kids also, they could even go to the lengths of kind of hacking the school system and bypassing the administrator password to make Minecraft run on the machines, which obviously was something not to encourage, but it just kind of goes to show the kind of lengths they can go to in terms of picking up these skills. I mean, I wouldn't have a clue how to do something like that, but, you know, I had 10-year-old students who were doing it. The second phase I've had is in my current job. I run an after-school club, and our club is a game-based learning club. Through the first semester, we were working with Minecraft and kind of following. So, I mean, they weren't really purely language learning goals, but just some general learning goals. So there we've actually used the game, and we mapped out there a program spread over 12 weeks of things we were going to do, but each time we would have a learning goal within Minecraft, and we'd spend our hour working towards that. But in terms of fitting it into like an existing curriculum. Obviously, that club is something outside the normal curriculum. When I first came across it, or first came across the idea of bringing it into class in this way, we had a project to do, a normal project. We'd just finished a unit about storytelling, and then, of course, the project was that students had to invent and tell their own story. And the style of doing that was up to them. The kind of content of the story was up to them. We would just work through, I'd given them this basic skeleton of stages of a story from the beginning through to the conclusion, and they had to come up with their own ideas. And I had one group, I recall, two boys and a girl working together, and they'd drawn a blank. We were like 20 minutes into the brainstorming process, and they still hadn't come up with anything. And I started to ask them, as I do in these situations, well, you know, think of something you're interested in, maybe, you know, a story you've read or a film you've watched or something you've interacted in with in some way that you're interested in and you can use as a topic for a story. And it was the girl in the group, actually, who said, well, could we use Minecraft for this story? So, I mean, I'd heard a little bit about the game at this point, so I asked them to explain to me exactly what it was. So once they'd explained the game to me, I was like, well, okay, how are we going to match this in with our goal of telling a story? And they said, well, we can tell our story and the setting can be the world of Minecraft. So I said, okay, go for it. And then suddenly they went from drawing a blank to suddenly coming up with all sorts of ideas. Then they had the remainder of that lesson time to work on it, and then they had a week to finalize their project ahead of presenting it in class. And what they did in the intervening week was they scripted out their story. They made PowerPoint slides, and they took screen grabs from in the game to decorate them. And then they entitled their story A Minecraft Adventure, and they told it to the class. And it was a big hit. And here, this was the way that Minecraft had helped my students reach those learning goals. So there was a pre-existing goal that they had to, at the end of this unit, be able to create and tell an original story. And it was just, this was simply the vehicle that allowed them to do it. It was the inspiration, their setting for the story. They used these different creature types from the game as, you know, I said they had to face an obstacle in the story and overcome it. So their obstacle was obviously being swarmed by creepers and then overcoming that by working together. So then we were able to say, okay, so you can manage to bring in the idea of teamwork. And, you know, I think they got a lot out of it. And then after that, it snowballed. We came around to another project 6 weeks later on a different topic. This time, I think the topic we'd been studying was unusual kinds of homes, and we'd had a look at tree houses and underground homes and things like that. So then I had, this time, more than one group, three or four groups who created tree houses in Minecraft and then took these screenshots of them or made a video and then narrated it to the class as part of their presentation. So in that way, using Minecraft helped me kind of meet those pre-existing goals. So then I started to look for places where I could maybe bring it in, not as a compulsory thing, but just for kids who were interested in it. And then, of course, the students came up with their own ideas. So eventually we had, by the end of that school year, so we'd had stories told in Minecraft. We'd had homes created and shown in Minecraft. We'd had famous landmark buildings recreated and described in Minecraft. And I even had one boy who, when we'd read a storybook in class, he recreated the finale of the story in Minecraft, which involved a pirate ship and the good guys getting on the pirate ship, stopping the pirates from kidnapping their friends, and then the pirate ship burning and sinking to the bottom of the sea. And he somehow recreated all of that in Minecraft, made a video of it, and did all the voice acting. So, you know, this, it kind of just shows the lengths of creativity they can go to get things done. And then, yeah, as I said, that helped us that year to reach those project-based learning goals of telling stories, of describing things, of like creating their own things, creating their own buildings, and creating their own kind of sketches, and then presenting them to the class.
Great. Okay. I'd like to welcome Gil Matos to the stream. He's also in the stream. So apparently it's still streaming. You can hear me okay over there? Feedback, please. Because my Hangout is frozen. But it's still, I can still hear. Am I still speaking?
I can hear you.
Okay, good. I'm just curious if my video is working. Can you see my video?
Yeah, I can hear you too.
And you can see it, see the video?
I can see video.
Okay, all right. So in my view on the computer, it's all frozen. But anyway, it's still broadcasting. The report from the chat wing is that it's still streaming, so everything is cool. All right. I've been kind of dealing with those little problems. Can I exit the conversation a second and come back to it? So anything you want to say, Jeff?
So I was curious, when they made their movies and their stories for the game, like what kind of tools did they use? What did you see them going to find, and what extra learning did they have to do just to complete these assignments?
Well, I found with most of the students, they were doing this kind of thing anyway. So grabbing the screenshots, they were just using the basic functions with whatever operating system they had. So the snipping tool with Windows or the command for Macs. Some of them I had taking screenshots from the tablet version of the game. Obviously, getting the videos is a bit more complicated. Some of my students were using a program called Fraps to do that. Others were using, some of them said through their father's computer they had access to something like Camtasia. Others were using, or some others who said they were interested and they wanted to do videos, but they weren't sure how. The thing I recommend to them is something called Screencast-O-Matic. It's at screencastomatic.com, and it's a free one, but it's limited to, I think, 15 minutes in length. But that's a free tool that's very simple to use. And I found with most of them, just giving them the name was enough, and they'd go and research it themselves and say, okay, yeah, thank you, teacher. I found that website you mentioned, and I downloaded the app, and yeah, I've started making my own videos. Again, there was this kind of self-taught process for a lot of them. What I have done with the club I've run here is we had a session where I kind of showed them step by step some of those things, how to take a screenshot and how to make a screencasted video. But again, I probably have about half of my students in that group of 12 who were already familiar and were kind of adding to what I was saying, and most of them, they seem to pick this kind of thing up quite easily. And the other interesting thing I've had in terms of videos is students who have the tablet version of the game, and they create something there, and I've had videos submitted where all you see in the video is an iPad screen, and you see two thumbs coming in from either side, and the students, someone else in their group has held up a phone pointed towards the iPad screen, and they've put their video together that way, which of course works just as well as long as the picture and the sound is clear, they get the same end result.
I'd like to welcome Tilly to the Hangout. She's just joined us. She's one of our participants who's also interested in Second Life and sometimes comparing those. I'd also like to get on to the question of, maybe for either of you, what you can or need to do in the... what David has been talking about is having his students do digital storytelling using using Minecraft, which is very effective, obviously. And then Jeff also manipulates inside the game. I've heard Seth Levin talk about that as well. Is it Seth or Joel? Joel Levin, I believe. There's a publisher whose name is the other one. Anyway, okay, so he also manipulates inside the game, and what kind of things, I want to make sure we come to that in our conversation. So I might just throw that out there until you might have some questions as well.
You know, there's what the kids will call vanilla Minecraft. So if you've played on our Minecraft server for this EVO, we're playing vanilla Minecraft, which means it's just the game as it comes packaged. But the community that surrounds Minecraft has really developed it almost in entirely new directions and turned it into new games through modifications. And basically, these mods are little packets of code that will alter fundamental states of the game. So, for example, if you wanted to create like a survival version. So, if you go onto our Minecraft server now, we're playing survival. If you wanted that sort of characteristic, but you didn't want the monsters, for instance, you can get them. You can use mods that allow you to set certain conditions on different, you know, parts of the game. And it's really hard to kind of talk about mods in a general sense because they're so diverse and the field is enormous. But a good example is, I'll try my screen sharing here and we'll see how it works. Let's see here.
Yeah, one thing I'm going to be unable to do, I have no control over the Hangout, although I'm its owner, so I won't be able to put the screen share in the. I won't be able to make it prominent in the video unless you're talking. If you're talking, Jeff, it will come out in the video recording. So just make you aware of that. Your screen share will come out in the recording.
Oh, okay. I'll just put up here real quick and just a point of discussion.
I'm in an odd situation. Yeah, go ahead. As I was saying, I don't have any control over the. I have no Hangout controls at all. But I'm still in. I'm still here. But I really can't do anything with it. But anyhow, gotcha. Go ahead.
So can everyone see on my through the chat? There's this little thing. This is actually still Minecraft. So this what we're seeing here is actually Minecraft, but all of these over here on the left side are different modifications. And as I go through, each one of these has a series of packs that will change the game. So for example, Tekkit here is very focused on engineering and massive building projects. So you can build machines that will dig in sources and different bits. You know, Big Dig is also very similar, that it allows for massive mining projects. There's Yoke Box, which is started by two fans of Minecraft who began podcasting and YouTube streaming of the game and have become, you know, celebrities in their own right, have their own set of modifications. So each one of these, if I go into it, will basically create a different game. Go ahead there, Vance.
Well, okay. When we were first setting up the server, you used one kind of map. And then we went to plain vanilla. Thanks to Philip, he created a flat map for us. Is the map you had there originally, was that? Can you tell us a little bit about that? Some of us experienced that.
Yeah, so when we begin Minecraft, you have like kind of two choices with your game, creative and peaceful. And when you play peaceful, essentially everything's unlimited and you can build using all the resources inside the game. So our map that we had through Philip was what was known as a super flat map. So it was peaceful, super, which means that practically to build. And you can build anything you want. And there have been folks, and if you go and search online a little bit, you'll see someone built a scale model of the Starship Enterprise from Star Trek. Someone has built a working graphing calculator. And so people kind of use these super flat maps to just make these massive building projects. And the other one that we just started playing this week to experiment with is what's called survival. And if you go into that part, you'll see, so I basically took our old map off the server and put the new map on. And what's kind of neat is from the server side as a teacher, you can switch these things out whenever your class may need it. With the survival map, Minecraft is what you call procedurally generated. So each time I click create new world, it creates a brand new world. And so, you know, a lot of players, they love to just kind of create a new world and go in and explore and see what's there. So I don't even know what's in our new map because it's just too big and too random to discover.
And you just generated it. It's a generated map.
It just generates.
I've been away for the weekend, and so I missed a very important actually, what I can do right now is go into Minecraft and have a look.
So if you're gonna join the new map, it's always very important to survive your first night. And kids will tell you a lot about surviving your first night. And the difference between our old masterful map and our new survival map is that when it gets dark, monsters will come out and they will attack you. So, you know, the strategy is to build a house as quickly as you can. And to do that, you have to gather resources. So everything in the game is a block, and you can destroy those blocks and collect them. So if you, you know, break up a bunch of dirt blocks, you can use them to build like a small structure that you can hide in overnight to keep away from the monsters.
Yeah, there are lots of videos about surviving. And what you have to do, and Philip has created some. And that's actually one thing that I can see from the videos, but of course, and need to learn how to do it. So if we're in survival mode, everybody needs to learn how to do it, which is, again, another challenge for us and one that will bring us closer to mastering the game.
And it's one of the best things. Like, if you want to get a kid talking about Minecraft, ask them how to survive the first night, because, you know, kids will love to sort of teach you how to do this successfully. And so you see, you know, Philip made a video, and kids in your classroom will want to really let you know. And so a kind of a good trick is, you know, say, well, I'm not going to remember all this. Can you write it down? And, you know, they'll come with a paragraph the next day. They'll say, well, here, go home and use this. And so kind of finding, like David was saying, I think is a really good point is, a lot of the language isn't going to occur in-game. It's all the byproduct, like the exhaust coming out of the games. So kids writing their stories about their adventures in the game, kids writing instruction manuals, kids sharing ideas to build something. And so making sure that, you know, when you do use Minecraft in the class, that you provide plenty of space to play the game, but then to actually explore outside the game is really kind of critical if you want a lot of language production.
And technology has always been like that. Actually, for a couple of years, I taught computing, and I used to jokingly call it language-assisted computer learning, because it was pretty much, I mean, I was teaching to non-native speakers, and you know, the principle's basically the same. It's English and computer, or English and technology. Language and technology just go hand in hand, because you need to find out so much about it, and it's inherently interesting. So people, it gives you something really to communicate about. That's, I think, the great strength I see in Minecraft is it's a real authentic, I want to do this, I want to talk about this, I want to share this kind of activity.
Yeah. And you know, when the students share, yeah, that's always where they're really going to kind of get engaged and get motivated. And so, you know, kind of the different approaches I've seen with Minecraft is, I guess, what I call like a museum, where teachers will build something in the game and then have the students go in and like look at it. You know, maybe they write a paragraph describing it or something. So I've seen, you know, teachers use this sort of like a STEM piece. I've seen it for like project-based learning, where they'll say, all right, I want you to make or create A, B, or C, you know, like a little story, or perhaps give them a specialized build that they have to accomplish. And then the third way I've typically seen the game used then is just like a purely, you know, constructivist viewpoint of just go in, do anything you want, and the learning will just sort of naturally occur out, naturally occur from the game. So kind of figuring out which one of those is the best approach for your topic is always the trick.
And also, the best approach is the one that you are able to implement, you know. So, for example, Joel Levin, who's his group is called Minecraft Edu. It's come up a couple of times. It's also in the Canvas course, the Minecraft Canvas course. Joel is associated with that. I'm sure you've all heard of him because you know, he does a lot of talks. He's quite well known as a teacher in Minecraft. And one interesting thing I saw him do, or because sometimes he comes on, he talks to people in live chats and things like that. I can't really remember where this was, but he, I think maybe it was one of his videos. He was he created a Mayan ruin, or perhaps it was Aztec. But anyway, he created a build, and in the build, he placed treasures and things like that, things for his students to explore. So he creates worlds, and obviously, and I've seen Jeff work setting up little tracks around the castle and things like that. Works pretty quickly. So if you really know what you're doing, then you're capable of setting up worlds for your students. And then if you're able to put that map on the server, it seems that, well, I'm sure that's what Joel does. He changes the map kind of like you would a holograph, I suppose, in Second Life. So speaking of Starship Enterprise.
Minecraft EDU is basically just a mod pack. So I talked about modifications, and that's all it is. And so it actually is a sort of a branch of Minecraft where, you know, Joel created a series of mods that all work together. So when you go into Minecraft EDU, there's some other fare that aren't in there. A great one is you can freeze all your students in place. And so in my writing classroom, when I had students play Minecraft, they get to play for about 15 minutes. I click the freeze button, and they all knew it was time to jump over to their writing document and write up what they were doing. You can actually, through Minecraft EDU, one of the features is you can put homework directly into the game. So when students open up the game, there's a little like challenge right across the top. This is, you know, please do this for, you know, next week. And so you can personalize these messages. Another interesting thing is you can put boundary blocks, like these invisible walls around certain areas, so students can either, you know, stay in that area or not be able to come into it. And all that's done through just these little snippets of code.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, David.
And David, I was just going to say, we've been using the Minecraft EDU version that Jeff was just talking about in my current school at the club. One of the advantages, it's like it makes the whole process of setting up a server and getting everyone online together a lot easier. You just get the server software, you just tick a few boxes for what you want, like if you want a flat world or if you want a randomly generated forest or desert terrain or something like that, what level of other creatures you want, if you want the monsters on or off, if you want to have day and night cycles or not, you just tick the boxes and then you click on start server, and then it gives you the the server address, and you just pass it on to your students, and they're in. Another feature I like, as well as the freeze feature, which I've also found very useful, you can also, in the EDU version, teleport all the students to exactly where you are in the game. So the very first time we used it, for example, I downloaded this tutorial world designed to get the kids used to, the kids who hadn't played before used to that whole game from the beginning, and the kids who hadn't played their EDU version a bit more used to the specific way that works. And I found, this is one thing I found in general with game-based learning, I need to train my students to stop and kind of read and absorb the instructions. I think when they're playing for in their own leisure time, they tend to just go. They get load the game and go. And they kind of, if something goes wrong later, then they'll go back to the kind of tutorial bit and try and figure out what went wrong. So I need to teach them how to do that. So that was very useful, because when we started the tutorial world, there's a list of like 4 instructions that you must read before you begin, and they all just ran past the sign and never looked at it. So I used the teleport feature to bring them all back. I used the freeze feature to hold them in place. And then, you know, I was able to focus their attention on very important instructions that were in front of them. So yeah, that's another one of the most useful things I found about the EDU version.
And as a matter of interest, for those of you, for those of us who are in the Canvas Minecraft MOOC, they're talking about setting up a server straight away. So that's there's more information there. And it's very interesting to find out how easy it is. And where do you set a server up? You can just use any computer, I think. But how do you maintain it? Do you have, because there are also some instances of people setting up servers for kids, let's say, and then getting hacked. As you say, the kids are really good at that. So there, I think Joel might have mentioned those in one of these talks that he, you know, how do you guard your server once you set it up? It's not, you know, what things do you have to consider when you're setting up a server to protect people, to make sure it's a safe server?
Well, with Minecraft EDU, that's the only instance in which I have set up a server like that. I have that installed on the teacher's computer, and if you want to access the server launcher, it's password protected, so they need the teacher password to get in there. So, I mean, obviously I'm not sure how much protection that would offer me from a very technically adept student or other person who's trying to hack from outside, but within the school network, that's been the thing we've done. I know that we had a little issue with some of the primary school kids going in to play on this software in their lunch breaks, and some of them were trying to find this server on the teacher's computer, but they were unsuccessful just because of a simple password protection, although I'm sure someone with the technical skills could quite easily bypass it.
Yeah, I think as I recall, the one that Joel was talking about, it was one of the parents had decided to set up the server on his own, and that's the one that got hacked. So I don't know how he did it, because one thing that Philip can tell us, or he's been promising to tell us, is how he sets up servers. So and he offered to do it for us too. So it's obviously a simple thing to do. And as you said, you just set it up in your teacher computer. So you get the software on the teacher computer or on any computer, and sounds like something that would be easy to try.
Yeah, there's for Windows, the executable file for Minecraft, setting up a server is really easy. Just click a couple buttons, it pops up, it starts running. Mac, a little more of a setup, but nothing too complicated. And then once your server's up and running, you know, I suppose maybe the best way to stay safe is to stay quiet, perhaps, you know, because the more people that know your server address, the more difficulties you could have, I suppose. But other features, you know, you have for instance, whitelists and blacklists that you can have on your server that will keep, you know, players in or players out. And they're actually just little text files. So inside your server folder, you can open things up and just, you know, type away changes. But yeah, security is a tricky issue because if someone really wants in, they're probably going to get in. But you know, kind of teaching students good citizenship skills, good digital citizenship skills of, you know, not sharing the server, not spreading out to their friends, keeping it only to the class. I don't know how to. What would be the best practices for handling that? Any ideas, yeah. Dave? Vance?
Well, as I understand you to say, it doesn't seem to be a really big problem. It could be that, especially if you use the Minecraft Edu software, maybe the parent wasn't doing that. His kids probably had ideas about setting up servers. That's my guess. You're not really having, you don't see it as a big issue with Minecraft Edu instantiation of the server software.
No, I mean, I have had some students ask me directly, oh, can we have the teacher password? Oh, we're just curious. We just want to look. But, of course, you just have to be a bit mean and refuse the requests. We have had a little bit, yeah, we've had a little couple of issues, like some, as I mentioned, some kids, especially some of the younger ones, coming in lunch breaks and, you know, logging onto the game. They can just log straight into the game without the server, of course, but then, you know, creating noise and disturbing students who are there maybe trying to work on other projects and stuff. So we had to, we just had to put some rules in place about that. I mean, I find just like with any other kind of learning scenario, the kind of management, the group management and classroom management is important. So they have to kind of lay down a few rules and agree on a few rules of acceptable use and things like that from the very beginning. I actually then started on the system of in the club I have at the moment, I put up a poster on the wall and I gave each member of the club 3 lives, and I told them that they lose a life if they're doing something like coming in and accessing the software when they're not supposed to be, and there are other things they can do within the tasks we do to gain extra lives and things like that. So it's kind of like gamifying game based learning, if that makes sense.
Three strikes and another metaphor.
Yeah. Well, Dave was talking. I just set up a server, and I'll try sharing my screen here again. But this window file right here, this window is, that's all a server is. These are the only files in your server. And so, for example, this folder called World is the saved world, so I can actually drag this out and drag in a new world and make, you know, any map I want to put in my server. And then, as I mentioned, here's like a little whitelist or banned IPs. So you can set these to be configured to, you know, as I said, only let your players in. There's a little folder or file called ops, and that gives players on that list server level commands. So, for instance, Vance on our Minecraft server can make all sorts of changes as an operator. And basically, that's just a list of what the game does. So, like, the true false statements of the game of what's allowed and what isn't allowed. And so, it's really not too complicated to set up a server. Overall, I mean, it's very little maintenance and upkeep. It's just sort of getting used to what everything does and playing around with that. So just as you kind of play with Minecraft, you have to play with these server settings for a little bit before, mm-hmm. you know, unleashing them to the students.
So I could set one up on my laptop, possibly. Would that be powerful yep. enough? Yeah, okay. In yep. that case, I could probably do that at the school where I am. And you've just simplified this to the extent that I think I know the next step I should take. So that's helped me a lot.
Yeah, and I have a document I can share with everyone about, you know, setting up servers and what it takes. You know, as Minecraft updates, it gets a little different. So there's been some adjustments made because of the updates to Minecraft. But overall, you can still follow that server list and set up a server pretty successfully.
Yeah, I'm actually in my context. First of all, the guys might they can probably afford this to buy Minecraft, but no one will give it to them. They'll have to buy it themselves. A few of them already have it. It's been something I haven't found a convenient way really to get them to play it. But obviously, if I just set up my own server, then I could just kind of do that during breaks and things like that, and then they'd probably all get interested. So. I've just learned something just from this chat that I think I can will actually help me in my teaching situation. So thank you for that.
You know, most every teacher I've talked to who uses Minecraft has started started the same way of they talked to someone and they started using it in like an informal learning, like after school clubs. And then from there, once it sort of got anchored and, you know, developed legitimacy in the school, then it started getting into their classroom. But, yeah, a lot of teachers I know have started just their own server, had these informal learning environments that just grew and grew and grew until, you know, school administrators wanted it in the classroom or were at least willing to give it a chance.
Yeah, Sarah appears to have joined us in the Hangout. I'm not really sure what's going on in the Hangout. I've got one computer here that I can see. I keep refreshing it because it keeps going offline. But anyway, I think I can see sort of who's in the chat. I don't see anybody's videos. But on the other computer, like I said, the screen is frozen, but the video appears to be working. I just waved. And my sound is coming through, and I'm participating. So, and the recording, and the stream is going, and the recording will be made. So, also, I don't know how long we want to sustain this conversation and take advantage of your time. I'm sure we appreciate whatever time you spend with us, obviously. But I would like to know or establish maybe a way forward. David said he was available on Thursday. About this time Thursday, I'm available. I don't have any plans that I know of, but I work during the day, so for me, that I get home noon GMT or 11 GMT or something like that. It seems that's early for Jeff. It could be just anybody meeting, but maybe should we try to meet before Thursday, or would next Thursday be a good next meeting date?
This time Thursday, I teach.
Okay. So earlier.
Yeah, Thursday, I'm usually free from about 11 GMT until about 4 GMT, I guess.
Okay. I'm home at that time. So 11 to 4 GMT to 1600 GMT. Okay. So Jeff, maybe we could get together around your schedule then. So it's as early as the morning as you'd like to come and before you teach, obviously.
Yeah, let's see. So yeah, the latest would be 15 GM.
Okay, so we should meet maybe 13?
After that, I'm
13 GMT. Are you up at 13 GMT? Well, I guess you're on the East Coast, so it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, okay, well, we could set up something for 1300 GMT. Maybe we could meet and hang out in a world or could be just a world thing.
I was going to ask Tilly where she's located in the world, because I think, you know, one thing to think about is maybe if, you know, smaller groups that are a little more globally regional. Where are you, Tilly?
Can you hear me? I'm trying
yes,
to
we can.
Oh, okay. I'm in UK, so GMT is my actual time. And I'm finding the Minecraft experience what I really need is to meet other people in there, because I did try with when Vance and I bumped into Carol Rainbow and had a little experience, but most of the time I'm going in there and just, you know, trying to figure it out and getting killed off, and it's still a little bit dispiriting. So I just kind of need to find times when I can really get a handle on, you know, and just have a bit more social experience, really. But I am teaching full-time, so, I'm in a university, so it's not sort of 9 to 5, but it would be nice to find some time, maybe a regular time when people are around and can just kind of meet and, so that's really what I was kind of looking for. I mean, I'm really appreciate this hangout, and I really appreciate everything you said, Jeff, because from the pedagogical point of view, some really interesting things and some important things. I wish my students could hear you. I teach a master's in ICT and multimedia, and only one of them is using any kind of game, so they don't really know Minecraft. And what I traditionally do is take them into Second Life, and we have a little explore, and some of them get into it and go on, and some of them, but most of them don't actually, but at least they need to know that for their course. Obviously, if I can include, I think Minecraft, it seems to me, strangely, has got a lot more purchase than Second Life, and even though on the outside, Second Life looks a lot sexier, you know. I mean that in the kind of the non-adult way. I mean, in the, you know, you can take kids in there and it looks nice. And so that's what I'm interested in about Minecraft. Why do 7 to 10-year-olds absolutely go bananas over it? That's what I'm trying to find out, because obviously it's got something that my students ought to know about, because they will be teachers teaching children who they could possibly use Minecraft as a way into language teaching. So that's my take on it. So I'm learning. I'm very, very much a new. I'm really right at the beginning, but I need to find some times when there are other people who will be around, and I can actually make it as well. Because I feel often I'm missing, you know, times when other people seem to be getting together, and I'm not able to get there. So that's
something I try to do. As the server moderator, I can see when people jump on. So if I see someone getting on, I try to jump in, and you know, be there physically. I'd about said, I try to be there in the game to kind of give people a sociability. But a good thing is maybe just send on the Google Plus page. Sometimes you're available, and then maybe, you know, we can get people to kind of group up based on their time conveniences.
Yeah.
But I like what you said about Second Life, and I've always described Second Life like my grandmother's house. It looks great, but I'm not allowed to touch anything. I think that's a big part of Minecraft, is the amount of agency. You'll hear everyone talk about agency, which is what I can do in the game. And Minecraft provides so much more ability. It's like throwing a box of Legos onto the floor and saying, go. I can build whatever I want, go where and do whatever I want. And, you know, we talked the last hangout about, you know, games as a cultural, you know, media. Game is books, movies, or television, or music at this point. You know, when you have, there are YouTube broadcasters who talk nothing but games. Some of them talk nothing but Minecraft, and they have 33 million subscribers and over 7 billion views. As a teacher, we have to be aware of this, because those fans are coming into our classes. And so when we talk about movies and books, they're going to think in their heads, my teacher does not talk about games. That's the weirdest thing. Because them, it's a cultural touchstone that they all relate through. Even that's where they go for entertainment, watching other people play games through things like, you know, Google Hangouts or Twitch. That's how they spend their time when they're not playing games.
That's actually to address a couple of things you said. One thing we've been using that has got people is Doodle. So you could create a Doodle and make it convenient to your times, and you know, give people a range of times when you're available, and then people, it has been used to some good effect. I think the last one, you were the only one, Tilly, who actually responded. That's actually how we met in Second Life at that time. Right. I saw you were there. So anyway, you can put a doodle, put its link into the community, and then, you know, some of us are watching that and coming online for it. And also for your students, Jeff is being recorded, so and all of us.
Oh, good.
And
good.
Yeah, so this will go as a YouTube recording, and I always make an MP3 version of it.
Okay.
I archive all these at learningtogether.net. So if you go there, actually you'll see the last Hangout YouTube and MP3 recording from all of the sessions we've had. Actually, all the sessions we've had for the last several years, 4 years. So anyway, those are and also about Second Life, too. I really agree with Jeff. I've been a lot in Second Life, but I find that people go there sort of, the teachers go there kind of to have conferences. So when you get there, you kind of want to right-click on something and sit on it and stay and sit and get, as Wesley Fryer calls it. So whereas with Second Life, you've got to be active. And it looks like
Second Life has blown my mind. Let's replicate reality. Like, having a classroom in Second Life blows my mind. The idea that I would take virtual me and put him in a virtual chair to do the same thing I can do in real life.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's Second Life is often kind of used like that, but people dress up and they seem to spend a lot of time on their avatars. And I've been accused of still having Linden hair, you know, so for some reason I just don't go out and get hair. Anyway, but I mean, I do enjoy meeting people in Second Life because it's great for community building, you know.
Yeah.
But still, when you're in Minecraft, you have to move. You have to do something. You know, it looks like, as I was saying, the way you set it up now, you actually have to, Tilly and I will have to go and find some videos about surviving and learn how to create those pickaxes and things like that and make sticks and, you know, create a house really quickly. Apparently, I suppose you have to do it a few times before you can figure out which trees to hit and how to, you know, aim your building. That was a problem for me right at the start. But you know, that's then if you get over the hump, if you survive your first night, then you're probably ready to go to your class and talk to your students and show them your server you just set up. That's my plan.
And the best part about these sort of environments. Oh, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, Dave.
I was just going to say with Second Life, I mean, I've seen Second Life in action in the classroom, and I've seen Minecraft in action in the classroom. The way I would describe the difference is it seems like Second Life is very much the teacher's world, and Minecraft is the student's world. Like, when I've seen Second Life in use in class, the teacher knows all about the software and is kind of having to teach the students how to learn the software as the first step. In Minecraft, it's usually the other way around. There's nothing to teach the kids about actually using the program. They already know. The only thing you have to do is kind of direct them into whatever kind of activity or learning goal you've got set up for.
Yeah.
Fire Centaur is a really good example of that. Do you know Fire Centaur in Second Life? Fire Prebish is his name. I can't remember his first name. But anyway, he is just amazing. He's a wizard in Second Life. He creates these just sets, and you go in and all this stuff, you can click, all the scripts are running, but man, you just—I mean, the show is the, you know, it sort of distracts a little bit from the. Although I suppose if you're trying to learn a language, you can communicate in this world, and it's interesting. People go there. Paul Prebisch is his name. I think he teaches in Korea. In any event. There are lots of people like that who create really interesting worlds in Second Life, but like you say, like Dave just said, I think, you know, look up Joel Levin on YouTube and find some of the things that he does, because he, you know, creates worlds in Second Life, in Minecraft, just like you could do in Second Life. But in his worlds, the kids can go in and, you know, really experience them.
Yeah. I mean, at first, I thought I didn't really see any connection between Minecraft and Second Life. I thought Minecraft was a game, and I knew Second Life was a virtual world. But when I started to get into Minecraft, looking around, and then found out that what people had built, you know, I thought, just a minute, you can do that in Second Life. And then I looked at what was built, and it looked very blocky and Lego-y. And I thought, well, why would you make that in Minecraft? But I just, you know, from listening, I realized what it is that the interface is so much easier in Minecraft for anybody to get into, whereas Minecraft is Second Life really is quite grasp. You know, you've got so many different things that you have to learn how to do to be able to do much. But the Evo that I'm on is making machinima, and that seems to be something that's quite creative, and you can make use of the fact that you can change costume and that you can find a place and you can script something, a little drama, so that you can get some people together, film it, and then you've got something that can be used as a jumping off point for discussion, but not the same at all as Minecraft, where the children are the ones being creative or the students. So I'm getting it slightly, but I'm still very, very much in the early stages of Minecraft. So,
and a great way to think about Minecraft is it's a toy, right? You know, Minecraft. If you want to be technical with your terms in virtual environment or game, or it really is like a toy, because the player determines everything. There are no rules. State, you don't win mine. It really just sort of a toy that they can do whatever they want with, and I think that's kind of the power of it. It can be a virtual environment if you want it to be. It can be a game if you want it to be, or it can just be something to build and have fun in if you want it to be.
Yeah.
Okay. So have we kind of agreed on 1300 GMT? Thursday, is that a good time for everybody? Is that a good time for you, Tilly?
No, I wouldn't be able to make that time. So I'll put a doodle poll up of the times I'm available, and if anyone is around, then I shall do a little bit more wandering. I assume I'd just go into the same server that we've been on before and see if anybody else is around.
Yeah, and try giving a yell to the Google Plus community, and we'll try to join you.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Google Plus is new to me as well, I'm afraid. I mean, to my shame, I should have known more about it, but this is a process of me learning that a lot of different things simultaneously, Google Plus, Minecraft.
Google Plus is, it's another issue, Google Plus. It's the first time I've run a course through the one place, Google Plus. Normally I've been using a combination of places, but I've been trying to do everything in Google Plus, and I'm just wondering how that's working out. It seems to me to be working fine. If you have your notifications on, at least you're keeping the loop.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to find where the place is to go, because that's the hard part, is to kind of very, you know, if you're busy, you want to quickly go to the one place. So I like the idea of it all being in one place. In some other of the Machinima, there's a PB Works wiki, and there's Adobe Connect occasionally, and then there's Second Light. You know, you're going into so many different things and having to remember, you know, what the connection is and how to get back to where you were before. So I think it's a good idea to try and simplify things. And so, but I can't say I've taken the maximum benefit of Google Plus so far. I'm still...
Oh, okay. Well, give us your feedback. You know, let us know how we can improve it. And I'll start a doodle for Thursday just to set a range of time and see if we can... say, fine-tune on something that other people will join or other people will be available.
It could be a snow day. If it happens to be a snow day, then I'll be available. Uh-huh. But we haven't had one yet, but we've had some very cold weather, you know, so it might be on the cards.
Okay. All right. And then Dave and Jeff, do you want to do an in-world thing, or should we go for any kind of hangout or just Skype? We're all Skyping together, Dave, by the way. We're making friends on Skype. I'm Vance, S-T-E-V, E-A-N-C-E-S-T-E-V in Skype. So everybody seems, I seem to be handling all the Skype calls. In-world?
Yeah, well, I'm fine with whatever you decide. I mean, it would be good to do something in-world. I have to see, because I'll be at work about getting my my laptop hooked up, because I don't have it on my own personal work computer. But yeah, I can sort something out for that.
Okay. Well, anyway, we'll go for something Thursday. And oh, one more little point too is we're coming into week four, and week four in the Dave Cormier scheme of MOOCs is for clustering, and that goes hand in hand with what Jeff was suggesting, that that's actually what happens in MOOCs is people discover they can't all meet at the same time, and so you form little clusters and get people in small work groups. People start breaking down into people who can meet. So this might be a very convenient time for some people. And so anyway, shall
Thank
we
you.
Call it a night?
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much for facilitating. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Vince.
Okay. Thanks a lot. This is February 1st, 2015, Learning Together with EVO MC15 with Electronic Village Online. Minecraft MOOC. We've been talking with Dave Dodgson, Jeff Kuhn, our co-moderators. Bobby has been in the background. And Tilly, we were just talking with Tilly just now. And Gil Matos and Maha Abdelmonim have been interacting with us in the Skype chat. Skype chat, the chat wing. Sorry, the chat wing in the background. So, good night, guys.
Thanks, Vince.
See you on, good night.
See you on Thursday. Yeah. I don't know if I can stop this broadcast. Maybe we'll stop over here.